Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen, banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Welcome to the award-winning legal news and review recognized from the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, featuring the law firm of Santucci Fiore Fiel, practicing intellectual property, business and entertainment law and litigation. Located in downtown Fort Lauderdale is Mike Santucci, legal panel attorney who co-chairs the intellectual property section of the Broward Bar. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law, also syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his fields of practice. And nationally known criminal defense attorney, Gary Ostro, Esquire. Over 30 years defending the accused in both state and federal courts. With over 500 jury trials to his credit, Gary Ostro's practice focuses on Fourth Amendment issues as related to search and seizure, as well as federal civil rights cases against police officers, as well as the departments and city in which they operate. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, Tiger Woods, the former number one golfer in the whole world, was arrested last Monday near his home in Jupiter Island, Florida, for driving under the influence, but his alcohol breath test was zero. And reportedly, prescription drugs was the issue as well. And prescription drugs are a growing threat on the safety in American roads. Tiger Woods was found in his car asleep with the engine still running. And today, our legal panel host, nationally known criminal trial attorney Gary Ostro, who handled numerous DUI cases, will be educating us on Tiger Woods' rights when it comes to DUI. Michael Santucci and Gary Singer will be back next week, but assisting us in filling in is well-known appellate attorney Tom Renier. Very good. And, first of all, good afternoon, Gary, and good afternoon, Tom.
Hi, Phil. Nice to be here.
Great. Appreciate you filling in as well. And earlier this week, that was a great segment, by the way, regarding the U.S. Supreme Court and the Fourth Amendment. You know, Gary, the first question I have for you really has to do about the change in technologies, because a lot of cars these days have push-button starts. So Tiger Woods couldn't remove keys from his ignition. Is that an issue? I mean, he was pulled over and sleeping with the engine running.
It's an interesting point that you raised, but the actual physical control element of DUI does not require that the car be running. So the ignition advances that you're referring to, I think, are irrelevant. If you're in a vehicle and it's able to be started, which is synonymous with the keys being in the ignition, but right, the car being off, you're in actual physical control. The car can be started and theoretically driven. Then that element of the offense of DUI is met. So either way, even with the engine not running, the ability to initiate the engine or start the car would meet the criteria. If the car is disabled, like we mentioned off the record earlier, I think you'd make an argument that there's no actual physical control because the vehicle cannot be driven. That's a different story.
That's an interesting point, because I did not see that or hear that, and I saw the video of the sobriety test. I mean, I really, I was a big fan of his. I still am. And if he went to the back seat of his car, still the engine is running, the right clicker is on, and he slept, does that make a difference whether he's in the driver's seat or in the back seat sleeping?
If he's in the back seat, then there's a question of whether he's put behind the wheel by a wheel witness. You got no wheel witnesses. You have no officer where the standard DUI, they observe a driving pattern, mm-hmm. and that's the basis for the stop that's offered on video. Here you have circumstantial evidence that he ended up in this side of the road for some driving mishap with the rims being damaged. If he's in the back seat, then there's a question of who is driving the car. So that would be highly defensible if that were the case. The car's registered to him. That's one of the first things they would look at. That's not enough if he's in the back seat. If he's in any other seat but the driver's seat, then you have an excellent defense because nobody witnessed the actual driving pattern, where typically in a DUI it is witnessed.
Well, Gary, let me ask you. So you might have a situation where somebody's not on drugs or alcohol and they're driving and they feel sleepy and they say, okay, well, I'm going to pull over to the side of the road and nap a little. The police might see that situation and they come and check out the guy.
Well, they have the exception. And the state attorneys use this a lot in DUI prosecutions. It's a safety check exception, mm-hmm. where there might be a Fourth Amendment issue where the officer had no basis to come over and effectuate maybe a seizure where the driver's not free to leave and it's a consensual encounter, and I'm putting that in quotes. Mm-hmm. There's an argument that the state makes, there's case law to support it, that it's a safety check. Well, I thought the guy might be sick because the way he was driving. Mm-hmm. For example, failure to maintain a single lane, the statute says that's an infraction. You make a stop. Mm-hmm. But the case law says there must be other traffic affected for you to make a stop that'll withstand scrutiny. Mm-hmm. So a lot of officers will throw in, based on their training and maybe coaching, and I'm not saying all of them, some maybe,
right.
from coaching from an assistant state attorney, that they'll ask them on direct examination, well, were there other vehicles that were affected by this erratic driving pattern? And that's the tip, you know, and I'm not saying they're all going to perjure themselves, mm-hmm. but if they didn't think of it before, and maybe it did happen, I'm not implying it didn't, too much. But if it didn't, in any event, the officer's going to say, oh, yeah, well, I had to take evasive action. Or there was a car that went by, and then I'll cross him and I'll say, what color was that vehicle? How come, was it a Chrysler? Was it a Dodge? Was it a Ford? And how come there's nothing in your report about any other vehicle that you wrote within an hour of that encounter? There's nothing in your sworn police report. So you can have fun with it, but, you know, a lot of judges are satisfied when an officer says, yeah, other vehicles were affected. So I don't remember what the original question was, but
something about Tiger Woods.
Something about him.
Tiger Woods.
The DUI of the Tiger.
Mm-hmm. The DUI Woods. Of the Tiger. Yeah. The DUI of the Tiger. Yes. I like that. But when it comes to reports in the news, sometimes they are not as accurate. And I did not know that his car, I guess, had the rear tires were bent.
The two left side tires were deflated and the rims were damaged, which would lead to another argument where you can argue the car was disabled,
right,
to the point where it wasn't operational, and therefore he wasn't in actual physical control. And I would clearly, among other defenses, I would assert that as well. In addition, the damaging side of that is, you know, the guy was driving on his rims because the rims were damaged, and he was allegedly all over the road and didn't know where he was. He was clearly out of it. The impairment issue is a slam dunk. The question is actual physical control. I think they have that. Impairment, let's give them that. What they're missing is how the state's going to prove what actual controlled substance or otherwise impaired him. Too many people think, oh, well, if he was on a valid prescription, a legal prescription,
right.
they can't charge him false. It's not the point. That's a question of illegal possession if he has an illegal prescription. But you can be impaired by a legal prescription of narcotics. Here's what I think is going to happen, and I didn't raise this in all fairness, and to be honest, when I had my other segment on Defoe's show, he's setting himself up for involuntary intoxication defense. It's very clear from the statement he made in the aftermath, which he shouldn't have made any statement, but if you're going to make one, you make one that's going to further this involuntary intoxication theory, which is a defense,
right.
that he didn't know that the mixture of medications, which he was taking for a while because the surgery had taken time some way back.
His fourth back surgery, by the way, and it was Vicodin, from what I read from the reports, was one of the drugs.
Right. I don't buy it, but it's a good defense that he's going to assert that I mixed medications and I didn't understand the implications. Because if you remember his first DUI mishap where he didn't get charged, because the substance that he was using that impaired him was not classified under the statute as one which you can charge DUI. It was Ambien. Since then, the statute has changed. That's the same drug that the local Broward County judge here, who I won't name, mm-hmm. was charged with DUI. It was broken down to a lesser charge because for that reason. It might have been under the statute then, but it was handled well and it was broken down because it wasn't one substance that you could have charged in his first mishap.
But do the police have a discretion to help him get home? Because he wasn't that far, although his car was pointed in the wrong direction. And I got to make a statement because the man is worth over $100 million. He can afford somebody to drive him. He can certainly afford Uber.
Well, let me just tell you how many times my DUI clients would tell the officer the first thing out of the mouth, but my house is right over there.
Right.
As if that were a defense. Uh-huh. It doesn't fly.
No?
I mean, it hasn't. Maybe at the times it has, I don't know about because they don't get arrested. So,
well, if I'm stopped by a police officer and they have a hard job to do, if I'm stopped by a police officer.
And you were drinking?
Well, if he asked me, I'm pulled over and he asked me if I've been drinking, what should I say? I know you're not going to tell somebody to lie.
I'm not going to tell you to lie, but I'm going to tell you after 30 plus years of trying hundreds of DUI cases, 99.9% of my clients say two beers or two drinks, whether it's true or not. But remember, it is legal in the state of Florida to consume alcohol and then to drive a motor vehicle. Otherwise, you wouldn't have parking lots at bars, restaurants, weddings, sporting events, and other, social mixings. So it is legal to be driving and have the odor of alcohol on your breath. That in itself is entirely consistent with law-abiding behavior.
Well, if it was illegal to drink and drive, why do restaurants and bars have parking lots?
But what's illegal is to while you're driving, you cannot consume alcohol. That's an open container law. So it is illegal to drink and drive.
And drive, that's right.
That's a different story. You know, all these officers say, well, I observed the odor of alcohol in your client's breath after he was speeding. Well, officer, isn't it more difficult to control a speeding vehicle than one that's being driven within the speed limit? No, not necessarily. Well, sure it is. That's why we have speed limits. So that is the beginning of a cross-exam. But let me get back to Tiger Woods, another thing that's interesting about that case. He wasn't asked to recite the alphabet backwards. That nobody is asked to recite the alphabet backwards, even though he said I was asked to recite the national anthem backwards.
That's what I heard.
But
yeah.
The implication.
That's hard.
It's ridiculous.
You can't do that if you're
forward.
Sober.
But
yeah.
And a lot of my clients on the video will say whatever the sobriety exercise, they're not tests, they're exercises.
Right.
Whatever the exercise is, they'll say, I couldn't do that sober. And I'll still go to trial because I don't think that's a death knell to my defense. But the point is this alphabet backwards thing is not a sobriety exercise. It doesn't happen. There's a videotape of him, and surely the videotape will show that he wasn't asked to reverse the alphabet. But the point was there's no pass-fail on these exercises either. You don't use those terms, pass. You perform to the officer's subjective.
And you're not supposed to say test, because I've actually gotten a case reversed where they kept saying it was a test. At trial, and the defense
they're exercises,
objected.
Yes, they're not the, tests.
And so, yes.
I've always have heard it referred to as tests.
Improperly, yes. And they're voluntary.
If you're a prosecutor in court and you keep referring to it as a test, and the judge lets you do that over defense objection, it'll be reversed.
Over defense objection,
yes.
You know, we're going to take a quick break. I find this fascinating, and, you know, keeping the road safe is so vital. Don't text and drive. But legal marijuana, prescription marijuana, is in the news, of course. It's now a prescribed drug down here. They're going to have dispensaries. Matter of fact, one is opening up in Boca Raton as well. And don't worry, Gary, I'll get you the address. But no, I'm joking.
I already have it. But before you run out and get your medical marijuana license, you got to know you cannot own a firearm if you have a medical marijuana license.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's the law, and you better know you're giving up your Second Amendment rights by getting one of those cards. So think twice before you run out and get
each
one.
State, I know we are a national program, before we actually take a quick break, in Illinois, interestingly enough, if you have an accident and you know, badly damage, car's injured, nobody died, and they take a blood test and they find a trace amount of marijuana, it is a minimum mandatory 18-month jail term. And we're going to be coming right back.
Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen, Banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review. Recipient of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar, featuring Michael Santucci of the law firm Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Reach them at 500law.com or 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back on the air. I'm Philip Bell, along with
Gary Ostrom
and
Tom Rinier.
And we're talking about Tiger Woods' issue. I guess it's not really DUI, or is it DUI?
It is DUI.
It is DUI.
The question is driving under the influence of what, but it's no less a DUI than alcohol would be.
Well, what should I do if I'm asked to take a field sobriety test? Although it's not called a test, is it?
No, it's not. In fact, you can't legally refer to it as a test, and a sharp defense lawyer will object, and a good judge will sustain that objection. But I'll tell you about a case I had with a very savvy client who was driving, impaired or not, I don't know, but he got stopped legally, got out of the car, says, I'm not doing anything, put his hands behind his back because he knew he was getting arrested. He refused, the double refusal, we call it.
Uh-huh.
Refused the road signs, refused the breath, blood, or urine, put his hands behind his back, got arrested. We tried it. The verdict was about 3 minutes, long enough to elect a four-person. So you won't get convicted. But you'll get arrested under those facts. He just didn't say a word, didn't give him any evidence. They had no evidence other than the odor of alcohol. That, with the driving patterns, may be enough to get past the directed verdict, but that's it. You're not going to get beyond a reasonable doubt if you have a decent defense lawyer. The verdict was quickly returned not guilty under those circumstances.
But so, didn't they take Tiger Woods' license, and now he's...
He will suffer if it wasn't a refusal, but if he blows over. In fact, there's no administrative suspension for blowing under the legal limit of 08. There's no consequences. So he will not suffer an administrative suspension pending any suspensions that may result from a conviction.
So the 10-day rule does not apply.
Doesn't apply. Good question. Doesn't apply because he blew zeros under an 08.
Well, again, we do have an open...
And agreed to give urine. If he had refused the urine, then they could have charged him with a refusal, and he would have suffered a one-year suspension with the first 90 days, hard time, no driving, and the rest of the year with a hardship.
Well, thank God himself and nobody else was injured. He was smart enough to pull over.
I don't think he pulled over deliberately.
Well,
I think he ended up on the side of the road.
Just
ended up there
not
with
at
his
all.
Foot on the brake with the car running with the signal on.
Right.
It was nothing deliberate about it. So it's just a freak thing.
Well, it shows you that the law applies to everybody. I mean, he has a privileged lifestyle, beautiful home. And well-known, nationally recognized individual. Again, the former number one golfer in the whole world.
$1.3 billion in endorsement and prize money over 15, 20 years.
Wow.
Not a bad 10 years.
No, well, not at all.
You would think he could afford a chauffeur, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know what? This is the second time something like this happened, but the last time he had that blowout with his wife and was running from the home, which we would all do. So that was more of a spontaneous thing. He shouldn't be put nobody should put themselves in these circumstances.
But not one size fits all. Some people are guilty and they'll plead guilty and then they will get whatever the penalties are.
That brings up another point I want to make. Palm Beach and Dade County, unlike Broward County, have diversion programs for first DUI offenders. So if you're a first offender, and I don't think Palm Beach is going to extend him a diversion based on the facts and based on his last mishap. I think he's going to be non-diversion material.
And that was less than 5 years ago, right? Isn't it a five-year look back?
No, that's two within five is mandatory jail time. Three within 10 is 30 days minimum, 10-year suspension. Though it's relevant to that. I'm just saying the diversion's available to a first offender without an accident or any aggravating circumstances. I don't think he's going to get diversion, and if he does, it'll be political. And I know of the state attorney in Palm Beach County, and I find him to be a straight-up guy like Mr. Satch in Broward County, and I don't think they're giving him diversion. I would be surprised if they did based on his history, even though he didn't get charged with the first DUI mishap or what could have been a DUI. I'd be surprised if he got diversion. Meaning, you go jump through all these hoops, you get the same conditions of a DUI, community service, suspensions, 10-day immobilization of the vehicle, court costs, probation, but you don't get the DUI conviction. You get a reckless driving conviction.
That gets expunged?
No. You can't expunge a conviction. DUI convictions stay on your record for 75 years. 75 years.
Wow.
So when you get a DUI.
So you really have to wait it out, you know.
Yeah. You got to wait it out or not get one, you know, which is probably the better choice.
But. Well, exactly. But, you know, people make bad decisions or there's inaccuracies as well. Those breathalyzers are not always 100%. I read an interesting article about that.
I've tried many breath cases, and the problem that the state has had with the breath cases, no matter how high, is my question ultimately to the jury would be, what is a .17 at, say, the guy blew at 11 p.m. prove my client's level was at 9:30 p.m. when he was driving the car? And the answer is we don't really know because they don't know if it was going up or down. But there's case law. This will freak you out, Tom. I believe out of the Florida Supreme Court that says we're going to adopt a policy that a .17 at any time goes back to the time of driving, and that is there's a presumption it was the same, even though there's a two-hour delay from the time you get arrested to the time of the observation period. By FDLE rules, you have to be observed for 20 minutes before they administer the breath test. You got to be transported to the BAT facility. You got to fill out paperwork. So by design, there's a minimum of an hour delay and up to 2 hours. So Supreme Court Florida says we're going to assume the reading is the same as when you were driving, which defies common sense.
Defies science, I think.
So what does it do? The state gets up there and argues that, and I'm looking at the jury, and I'm thinking, yeah. And in all due respect to the state, you have to assume that my client had the same reading 2 hours later, like looking at him, like, you know. Like, it's so absurd. You have to look at these prosecutors are making that argument, which defies completely any and all common sense.
Well, Gary, let me ask you, too, now. Let's see if I got this right, but couldn't it be that you have a couple of drinks, you're driving home, and the drinks have not gotten in your bloodstream yet? They're not impairing yet.
That is the argument I've made. And if I don't put my client on, they don't know the answer. So that is an open question, and because of the burden being such a high burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, I've had good experiences on high breath cases because of that, because they don't know the answer. And my client's not going to testify, and I do the voir dire thoroughly enough, we're not going to be prejudiced because my client didn't get up there and testify.
But as a criminal attorney, is it always in the best interest of the client to plea bargain, or is it one of those depends?
You can't plea bargain a DUI because you're going to get, if you plead to the DUI, you're going to get minimum mandatories with a mandatory conviction. Whereas on a third-degree felony like a possession of cocaine, you can avoid a conviction as a first offender. A DUI, you're going to get convicted even though it's a misdemeanor. You're going to get all the special conditions that go with it mandatorily. So even if somebody represents themselves on a DUI and pleads guilty on a first offense, they may get the same thing than if I hired a high-priced lawyer who pleads it out because it's the same result because they're mandatory penalties on a DUI with a mandatory conviction.
Well, you know, last week when this is being recorded, you were on the Miami Sports.
Yes.
And I guess this is a hot topic, and it's not going to go away. And as it progresses, we want you to, obviously, as a legal panel host, to keep us informed and report on what the follow-up is.
Will do, absolutely.
Very good. And Tom Renier? Renier?
Renier, yes.
Thank you. I appreciate you for filling in. Yep. That's, someone's doing a shot at Nova School. You know, students that listen, I guess we developed a drinking game because of me mispronouncing names.
Right. Can you be sued if one of them is in an accident because he gets drunk?
Gram shop.
That's a good point.
Always thinking this guy. Yeah.
You've been listening to Legal News and Review. I'm Philip Bell, the moderator, along with
Gary Ostro.
And, of course,
Tom Renier.
And, Tom, I appreciate you filling in for Gary Singer, as well as Michael Santucci. Those are two big shoes to fill, and you did a great job.
Thanks.
And we look forward to seeing you next week. And as our tagline is, remember, put down the cell phone, don't text, and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.
Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen, banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.